There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And welcome to FM Talk 106.5. Filling in, this is Jeff Poore filling in for the great Sean Sullivan. He's letting me use his microphone today, believe it or not. For better or for worse, probably perhaps a lapse in judgment on Sean's behalf, but I fill it in. Usually hear me on Wednesday mornings on Sean's morning show. You should listen. It's a very good segment. I highly recommend it. But a little bit about myself real quick, and then we'll get into some weather news here. I'm an editor at Breitbart News, also at Yellowhammer. I contribute to, and I do a radio show up in North Alabama for WVNN in Huntsville, Alabama. So if you're ever up that way, to check that out, if you would. Need to talk about some weather real quick. If you haven't been out and about on the streets today, it's real stormy out. There is a flood advisory. The National Weather Service in Mobile has issued a flood advisory, urban and small stream flood advisory for west central Mobile County and in southwest Alabama until 1:45 p.m. That includes Midtown Mobile, Downtown Mobile, Pritchard, Tillman's Corner, and the Mobile Regional Airport. We will keep you up to date on that as these roll in. If you've been listening, you may have heard some of these alerts, but be safe out there. Coming up on the program today, jam-packed show for you. Here in just a second, we will have former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville joining us on the line. He is running for United States Senate. Going to talk to him. There's races starting to heat up a little bit, back and forth between Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions on Twitter, if you haven't been paying attention. But we're going to get Tuberville's side of this and what he thinks is about what's going on. Now, also today, after that, we got Secretary of State John Merrill, who was on CNN yesterday about this vote-by-mail stuff. I think it's a very important topic to talk about. And then in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll have... we got somebody banging on something out there. And the 1 o'clock hour, well, Steve Flyer, he's a columnist, political columnist here in Alabama. Very interesting perspective, historical perspective of what's going on. So a lot of reasons for you to stay tuned. Hopefully you could do so. But join us on the line now. Running for the United States Senate, a good friend of my show up in Huntsville, former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you? You're out of place.
I am. So real quick, short of it is we're on furlough this week, and so I have taken the show on the road. I'm in exile, if you will. How are things on your end?
It's good. Been traveling. Today is a day of non-travel, just on the phone all day. Just returning phone calls, emails, trying to catch up, and then back on the road tomorrow up around Birmingham. I was in Mobile all day yesterday, and Birmingham tomorrow, and the next 2 days up in Huntsville. So, same thing. Just keep on going.
It's
48 days to the election.
It's certainly much different than the last time we talked. Coming out of the pandemic, I feel like we're turned a corner. Now, you and your opponent, Jeff Sessions, are really kind of full throttle at this point, going forward with all the campaigning and stuff.
Well, I've been full throttle for the last 6 weeks. Now, when the pandemic hit, we're all scared to death. The media obviously scared us to death that we're going to lose 2.5 million people in this country. And so you don't know what to expect. After about 2 weeks, I said, I got to get back to work. I can't sit around. So I spent about a month going around seeing all the farmers all over the state, mostly outside, planting season, talking to them about the food chain. Our farmers have absolutely got kicked in the last couple of months with this pandemic, because when you close the grocery stores, you don't have places to sell your products. And so people have lost a lot of money. The whole country is in tough shape. Our economy has dropped people out of work. Got a lot of people sick. It's tough times. But again, I just I tried to go to hospitals and see doctors. I went to small businesses all over the state, just continued to travel. But I tell you, it's a different world today than it was 3 months ago.
Coach, we're kind of opening back up. Do you think we're on a good trajectory as far as the economy goes? It seems like we're turning the corner a little bit with everything else kind of getting back to normal. Obviously, there's masks and all these other measures in place, but you've been out and about. What are you hearing on that side?
Yeah, people are still scared, obviously, and they should be. But people ask me, too, Coach, what do you think about the next stimulus? I said the next stimulus should be people going back to work. We can't afford to put more money out there right now. It's we've kicked the can down the road, as you and I have talked over the years about how much our career politicians have just overspent and got us in a huge deficit, and now we're getting ready to add $3 or $4 trillion more, and our kids and grandkids are going to pay for it. But we got to get back to work. That's the main thing. We got to get our economy going again. Well, we got almost 40 million people out of work on unemployment, and we had the lowest unemployment ever 3 months ago. So we'll be back. America is strong. We understand how to do it. We put it on the backs of the American taxpayers, which we always do. And the American taxpayer is going to go back to work and going to get this country going again. And especially in this state, I tell you, people are fired up about getting back to work and getting things done for the state of Alabama everywhere I've been.
Coach, we'll belabor your opponent in the recusal. I think we've litigated that, but Donald Trump did weigh in over the weekend, and there was a back and forth between he and the president, between Trump and Sessions, that is. I just wanted to hear, what's your reaction to that dust-up? You kind of are watching from the sidelines, it sort of seems.
Well, I would imagine the former attorney general knew it was coming sooner or later. I mean, you can't do what he did to the president and the country and think it's just going to be swept underneath the rug. He's going to have a tough time. I mean, that's not going to be the last time. And the president of the United States is adamant. And one place in there, I saw in the tweet, he said that he needs to drop out. But we're going to run our campaign, and we've got every second accounted for, from now all the way through the general election. We have to beat Doug Jones. I mean, we got to do it. I mean, there's no... We can't take a chance, because there's going to be a lot of close elections in the Senate race, and if we don't get the Senate back, we're looking really rough in terms of what type of Supreme Court justices will be put in, and obviously federal judges across the country. We have got to win the seat back from the Doug Jones, and obviously with the president on my side, we're going to have a great chance to do it.
Coach, your opponent is calling for you to debate him. Five debates, I think, around the state. Do you have any reaction to that?
Yeah. Well, I'm not used to punting on first down. That's pretty much what I'd be doing. He debated once or twice in his career, and obviously he's behind. He wants a way to catch up, and the best thing I can tell him, he needs to get out there and work like I'm working. I'm not sitting at home. I'm going around meeting, shaking hands, and that's what I've done for the last year and a half. You know that. You see me out there. I have not slowed down, and I think going straight to the people in the small towns, communities, in the cities, and telling them exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it is the most important thing. And just getting up in front of a TV camera for an hour is not going to do a whole lot of good. I want to spend my time out with the people that's going to vote for me and people I'm going to represent, and good luck to him doing what he wants to do. But they knew way back we weren't going to get in the debate, because he wouldn't debate us back in the first 3 months he got in. We couldn't even find him. He was missing in action. He didn't want to answer the recusal question, and so now he's down 15-20 points. He wants to debate, but we're not going to bite on that hook.
Do you think that recusal part of this is it playing into this campaign in a bigger way than you might have expected?
Oh, well, I knew it was coming. I mean, you knew that the president that we have as we speak is a guy that he depends and demands loyalty. He depends on work ethic, and he when we elected him, we knew he was different, and that's the reason we elected him, a guy that was for the common man, somebody that's going to make a tough decision, somebody that's going to put a team around him that was going to be tough. And unfortunately, the attorney general he put in there after a few weeks decided that wasn't for him. He recused himself not once now, but 11 times from 11 different situations, one other one being Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are two of the most corrupt politicians and their foundation in this country. And he said, well, there just wasn't anything out there to go after them about. Last time I looked, they gave 30% of our uranium away to Russia for money for their foundation. To me, that's something that needs to be looked into, but a lot of other things too.
Joined by former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville here on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filled in for Sean Sullivan. Coach, got just a couple more moments here with you real quick. Big issue. Nancy Pelosi and Democrats in Congress are pushing this vote-by-mail system where we, instead of having people go to the ballot box, they are sent the ballot and then it gets returned postage on it, almost like the census is or something. What are your thoughts on this push for vote-by-mail?
You know, we polled that, Jeff. 80% of the people we polled in the state of Alabama want to go to a poll. First of all, they want their vote to count, and they want to make sure when they go to that poll, they understand where it's going to. When you put it in the mail, when you do something in terms of this harvesting ballots and all those things, you get pressured. People get pressured to do things they don't want to do. But you go to the poll, you pretty much feel like that you voted, and it's going to count. And I think, and I'm just polling that the people of this state, the people of Alabama, want to go to a poll. They want their vote to make a difference.
And you know, does it lend itself for a Democrat outcomes? I think that's the fear from a lot of people, that if you do that, it's going to be Democrats that are going to get an advantage from this.
Well, they're looking to vote people that are not citizens. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we can't even get a voter ID. I know when we go to the polling place that we have to use some kind of ID to vote. But some of these states, they don't do that. Some of these states, you go in and vote two or three times, I guess. I mean, it's like everything else in Washington, D.C. on down. They try to control the narrative. They try to look for a way to get around things to make certain things happen for them. And I'm telling you, you're getting ready for the next 5 months. They know, they being the Democratic, really the Socialist Party now, they cannot afford Donald Trump to win this election. They've almost run the clock out on him. They know if he wins, somebody's going to jail. We finally got an attorney general up there that's going to put somebody in jail. And so if there's that, you're going to see all kind of things going on in this next. Hopefully we got enough strong people that will oversee the voting in the election, make sure everything's done right, and let the best person win. But we're going to see all kind of shenanigans in this race coming up for president, and maybe a lot of other races.
Hey, Coach, we've got to leave it there before we go. Tell folks where they can find out more about your campaign.
TommyForSenate.com. Go in there. We've got some great videos. You can look at our things that we stand for, and we'd appreciate your vote and support.
As always, Coach, thanks for making time for us this afternoon. That was former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville here on the program. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for the great Sean Sullivan here today. But
hey,
ironically,
hey,
oddly,
can I cut in?
Oddly, he's here. Well, he just kind of bust into my show.
Yeah.
Would I ever do that to your show?
You have not, but I mean, we may be setting a precedent here.
Well, let me toss it over to you for a special message for our friends at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry.
Yeah, let's check in with our man Angelo on the scene. He's talking about all the cool new items, and you mentioned gold, Angelo. What's up at the shop?
It was weird. Overnight, gold and silver dropped a little bit, but as soon as the markets opened in the United States here, everything shot back up again. So gold is over $1,700 an ounce, and we have lots of gold in stock, from the 10th-ounce American Eagles all the way up to 1-ounce Canadian Maple Leafs, plenty of items in stock ready to go. And silver, everything from 1-ounce, 5-ounce, 10-ounce bars, 1-ounce rounds, American Silver Eagles, all those cool pop culture things we've talked about over the, you know, over the past few days. And on the way in, multiple boxes of Mint State 65 Morgan Silver dollars from the 1800s. Very cool stuff.
All right, let's talk about how to come check that inventory out. How do we find you?
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can also check things out on Facebook or on Instagram. If you want to sit at home and check out the jewelry and some of the cool coins, go to mobilebaycoins.com. Click on the Shop Now button, and then click on the eBay store link, and that'll get you there, too.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too.
See you.
See ya. Angelo checking in for Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Now, back to Jeff.
Now, back to me. Thank you for that, Sean. Sean is... I am doing the show today, but Sean is actually running the board over there. Normally, if I were worth my weight, I would be over there using the board and making radio great again.
Mm-hmm. You just a one trick pony.
Well, then my problem is that, like, well, you know this. You brought me into this format.
Mm-hmm.
It's your fault now that I am a radio host in Alabama.
Yeah, I'll take responsibility for that. It's good. It's good I did. So somebody could get an interview with Tuberville on the station.
Oh, yeah, we're working on that.
It's good. Like they're saying on the text line here and on social media, all it takes, Ben says, apparently all it takes to get Tubbs on the air is an Auburn host. So, guess my, you know, is it the University of Alabama thing that keeps me from getting the interview? I don't know.
You don't know the secret handshake.
I do not. I
can show you the secret handshake.
I don't know. I don't know that I need anything more to forget, you know? I mean, I'm getting old enough, I can't remember anything else. So.
We still going? We got to do the Auburn-Alabama game again this year?
Yeah. Well, you know, we missed last year, but hopefully this year things will work out.
We got to do a show there.
Okay.
So last year I did a show for my Huntsville show. I did it in the stadium.
Yeah, were you in the press box?
They let me use the press box.
Which is nice.
The hope was to do it on Tuber's Corner, but they didn't have to plug in stuff. So we did it in the stadium, and it's kind of a cool setting, and it's an empty stadium, but they're getting ready for the big game on Saturday, and you see them where they're checking the field and all of that. So,
well, being in the press box is cool, even if it's not a game going on. I mean, press boxes are neat. Some places they're not. Some places they're sketchy.
But you feel it's a state-of-the-art press box.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying overall, press boxes are cool, but they're, if you've spent enough time in radio, which you haven't, you're new to it, and if you'd ever gone to high school press boxes and stuff, it's not.
You feel like a gust of wind will knock it off into the...
Not great. Not always great. There's some that are great, just not all of them.
So they like to call those historic. because like a press box at some of these little racetracks around the mm-hmm. South, they're like trailers up on stilts.
Yes.
And you don't know, you know,
wires hanging out that are attached to nothing, but they may be live. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. You don't really know what's happening there. Yep. And stuff can fall out of the roof mm-hmm. and or out of the ceiling. And
so you do know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. But that's kind of like where I broadcast out of now. It's like training for these war zone situations where, you might get hit. You might get tetanus.
Right. There's a chance you'd need a tetanus shot. There's a chance a rodent could come running through during the broadcast.
There's always that possibility. I tell you a story about WVNN. Whenever it rains like it did today here,
mm-hmm.
it floods.
The station floods?
Have you ever been to a radio station that flooded?
No.
What do you think? You're sitting there with all this electricity. This highly charged equipment.
It would flood. One of the stations where I got my first commercial start was in Tuscaloosa for the Grant Radio Group, and I started on WTID. And our building was a Morgan shed in a cattle pasture. Nice thing is, it was up on blocks, so it didn't. Now you would walk out of there and step down the steps and have a chance. You'd have to have your lacrosse rubber boots on to get to your truck and push the cows out of the way to get to your truck. But it didn't flood in. Flooding in studio, not electricity, water. I don't know if you ever blew the lightning bug and all that stuff. Not good.
I bet you that was a strong signal, though.
A heck of a signal.
Down in the cow pasture like that?
Yes, it was. And we had the FMs there, but the AMs were there because of the cow pasture, and they just put the FMs there. So, yeah, there was one cinder block building, and we were in the Morgan shed. It was high-end. high-end stuff.
It wasn't like in the summer there, though. Did you have to, like, bring in a fan or something?
We had a window unit, and it depended on, you know, where the mics were positioned. You have to turn the window unit off before you did your break.
Because it'd be so loud, yeah, right? Yeah. You do the show of the battleship.
Yes.
You have that happen to you a lot, where something will just kick in and...
Right, right.
And you think it's a feedback or something, but no, it's
ambient noise.
It's just loud equipment.
I just wanted to point out, too, that the thunderstorms that came through Mobile County, still a few making their way into South Mobile County, just a little bit southeast of Bila Battery, but some pretty heavy cells as you get east of Bay Minette, heading towards Atmore now in a line, crossing 65 and heading up into Monroe County and back into Clark County. So flash flood warning in effect until 1:45 today.
That's a radio professional for you right there, ladies and gentlemen. He works in that weather very seamlessly, whereas I get at the top of the program and I'm just bumbling through everything. We're going to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan here today on Midday Mobile. Always a pleasure to do so. A little bit about myself. I'm a Yellowhammer News contributor, Breitbart News editor, and I'm on this station every Wednesday at 8 a.m. So make sure you check that segment out if you're out and about. Join us on the line now, a good friend of my show up in Huntsville on WVNN, Secretary of State John Merrill is on the air with us. Secretary, how are you today?
Hey, Jeff, great to be with you, even though you're on the other end of the state than where you usually are. We're delighted to be able to share with you, with your listeners today.
Need to diversify my geography a little bit, I think. The reason I asked you to come on, just fantastic segment you did with Brianna Keller yesterday on CNN, and I think that's such an important topic. This push for vote by mail in America right now, it's clearly... There's some political motivations there, but I think you bring up some good points. Just logistically, how difficult it would be to institute such a system.
Well, there's no doubt about it. There's a number of factors there that need to be considered. Let's just talk about a couple of them. First and foremost, no Secretary of State's office or election office in the United States is prepared to absorb all of the changes that will be necessary to be made if you actually have direct vote by mail. Now, the three states that lead the union in vote by mail are Colorado, Oregon, and Washington. And the secretaries of state in those states will tell you that in order to be effective, as you move toward being a direct vote by mail state, you need to have at least 60% of your ballots currently being returned through the mail system. Now, some people may say, well, where's Alabama on its regular mail return balloting? 4%. So we're 56% away from the threshold today. Number two, some people may say, well, what's the cost? How is that going to affect what we're normally doing? Well, Jeff, each time we have an election, primary, a runoff, and a general, it costs us about $5.5 million per election cycle. So for a full election cycle, we're looking at about $16.5 million. But if you do the direct mail-in voting through ballots that are mailed to people's homes and then returned to the point of origin, it's $18,800,000 per election cycle. So you're talking about going from $16.5 million to almost $60 million for the execution of the election cycle. And you're assuming that you're going to be able to identify a mail house, a clearinghouse, that will be able to do what needs to be done with all your ballots. But see, you're probably not going to find those people because they were not prepared for this either. And you're going to end up like Nevada has, where thousands of ballots are being mismailed to addresses where they're not supposed to be mailed. Or find out what you did in California, where 83 ballots were mailed to one single person. This is a problem that we don't have and we don't need in Alabama.
Well, even beyond Alabama, it just seems like a logistic nightmare, because with an election in November, and here we are, we're sitting here in the end of May, doing something like this seems like a heavy lift, but yet the approach Congress is doing, well, we'll just throw a bunch of money at it. We'll incentivize these states to do it. But, you know, you could put money at it, but building an infrastructure, doing anything, especially in the realm of government, it's not as easy as they are making it out to seem.
Jeff, they say that it takes 5 years to fully implement the process for direct mail-in voting once you choose to adopt it in your state.
I mean, that's the logistics of it. Like, you got to know, like you said, you got a place to put the ballots. Just because when you go to your polling precinct, a lot of that's there. It's all spread out, dispersed all throughout wherever your county and your state, whatever. If you start this vote by mail, maybe you do it, even if you do it on a county level, where do these ballots go? Where are they counted? What's the timeline? What, you know, there's all these elements to this. And then they just say, well, we got to do it because it's the right thing. But they don't really offer you the template for pulling this off. And if we were to approach it right now, if you and I were to get in the room right now and say, how are we going to do this? How are we going to figure out how to do this? Then I think you would find it be a lot more difficult than just okay, we'll do it tomorrow.
There's no doubt about it, and you have to make sure you give full attention to this or any effort related to the elections process. And the main reason for that is because this is one of the most precious rights that we have as citizens, and we want to make sure that we're protecting the transparency, the credibility, and the accountability of this process.
Right, and you know, that's the other part we talk about. You know, one person, one vote, or whatever, and you don't. I just think there's an element to this that the logistics are hard, but you also got to like take it upon yourself. There's a personal responsibility element to this, to just getting up and going to the precinct and casting about and doing everything. And I get that we're in the middle of a pandemic, but it's not like there's not alternatives here for people that want to vote. And so going to this system, it just seems intellectually dishonest to portray it the way they're portraying it.
Agreed 100%. And look, Jeff, the reason that is happening is because these liberal Democrats that you're talking about are trying to take advantage of the same type of adage that we have seen introduced before when Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of Chicago, former chief of staff of President Obama, said, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Right, and then they're trying to capitalize on it, but it's also peculiar, I get. Well, not peculiar. It's expected. Do they think they can throw a bunch of money at this? And I think this is kind of a lesson, just kind of the way government thinks sometimes, that if you just have enough money, then any obstacle is insurmountable. And then that's clearly not the case here.
That's right, absolutely.
Yeah, because what would they – if they said, Secretary Mayor, we'll throw $1 billion at it tomorrow if you could make this happen. I mean, you would have to defy some laws of human nature and physics to get this done, right?
Well, look, one of the things that has not even been discussed properly and that we learned about at our Secretary of State meeting in February in Washington, and then conversations that we've had in March, April, and May related to direct mail efforts, is how many of these clearinghouses and these mail houses are not able to meet the need, the contractual obligation they'd already entered into with all of these people that they're doing business with, because their people have received COVID-19. Their people have asked off. Their people have been laid off. Their people are concerned about going into work. And because of all of those things, they are having problems in these other states that already have adopted direct mail-in voting.
Getting to direct mail-in voting, though, that's what we do in Alabama, and I think there's a misconception here. So I was trying to explain to my mom the whole absentee ballot process, but, you know, they want just to send the ballot to you and you mail it in. Where in Alabama, you ask for the ballot, right?
That's right.
And you have what appears to me is like you're going out of your way here with a publicity campaign to explain to people that you have a deadline, and you give them the number of days left until that deadline. But it's not like if you wanted to vote by mail, you're not telling people no. You have that opportunity, And that's sort of that intermediate step seems to be what turns a lot of Democrats away.
Well, look, there's a reason for that. Because what you find out of dealing with these liberal Democrats is that if you don't do it exactly the way they want you to do it, then you're not doing it right. And that's a problem. Because they're entitled to do it the way they want to, but that does not discount that when others are doing it differently and more successfully than they are, that that's not an effective way. Because what we're doing continues to break records, and we are very, very excited about it.
And what they've done on the left, they've targeted you. I've watched this unfold on social media time after time, where some liberal stooge will come at you with some hypothetical or whatever it is. But I don't think this is by accident. I you know, this most people, no offense, don't know who their Secretary of State is, but you have random people coming at you because, for whatever reason, that they want to make an example out of you. I think that's not an accident. I think that there is a movement afoot underneath, perhaps maybe not as apparent to most of us, that they want to really change the way we do elections in the United States.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And there's a reason that they want to do that, Jeff. And the reason they want to do it is because they want to use this as a mechanism to change the way that our government works. And the only way to do that is by changing the people who are making those decisions. And those people who are making those decisions are elected officials at the local, the regional, at the state, at the federal level. And when they can control and manipulate the elections process, they can control and manipulate who the people are that get to serve in those roles.
I mean, it's really a darker thing than we realize. I think they're trying to manipulate the process, the democratic process, and make it...
Jeff, you got a handle on it, my friend, and that's the reason, as the chairman of the Republican Secretary of State for the United States, I have made it my goal to ensure that we continue to work as hard as we can in all 50 states to inform business leaders and voters about what's at stake here in 2020.
Hey, Secretary, we got to get out of here, get to break. Real quick, give us an updated tally on registered voters, and then tell people where they can find out more about your office.
Absolutely. Thanks for asking, Jeff. Since January the 19th, 2015, 5 years, 4 months, and 8 days ago when I became the Secretary of State of Alabama, we have registered 1,513,888 new voters. We now have a state record 3,593,385 registered voters, but we've removed more than 920,000 people from the voter rolls because they've moved away, passed away, or been put away. Anybody that wants more information on what we're doing and how we can help them can go to alabamavotes.gov. They can call us at 334-242-7200 or call me on my cell at 334-328-2787.
Secretary, as always, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, Jeff. Great talk to you.
Good to talk to you. That was Secretary of State John Merrill here on FM Talk 106.5. We're going to take a brief timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And this isn't Sean Sullivan. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan. Sean stepping away to attend to some matters, and I have commandeered the microphone from Sean, but thankful for the opportunity to get behind his microphone. It's always good to be back on in Mobile, even if it's just for one day. I am radio host up in Huntsville, Alabama on WVNN, but it's good to get some reps in behind. It ain't real actual radio studio, it feels like. I just can't tell you how nice it is to have equipment that seems to function. So things going on in the news I wanted to get to before we get too far along here. I'm going to talk more about the Senate election in the next hour, at the top of next hour, so you want to stay tuned for that. I want to really kind of get into something that I'd started a little bit this morning in my segment with Sean, but the whole Trumpism and how that applies to Alabama's U.S. Senate. So you want to stay tuned for that. We also got Steve Flowers' columnist coming up. That's at 1:30, so that is keep that on your radar as well. Fauci. Y'all know who Fauci is. He is the director of the U.S. National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases on TV all the time on the Coronavirus Task Force. He's not as bullish on the second wave today. In an appearance on CNN this morning, he doesn't think that the second wave is inevitable. We've been hearing about the second wave of coronavirus, and we need to be ready for the second wave. Have we not learned our lesson here? The coronavirus was supposed to be so bad, we had to shut everything down. We had to have these field hospitals at the ready. We had to have all these ventilators, all this industrial capacity taken away for the sake of ventilators. And now we're hyping up a second wave. I mean, the second wave could very well come. Don't get me wrong. But do we need to move heaven and earth for something that might happen? There's a lot of things that might happen. But one thing we've learned about society is that we're pretty nimble. We adapted properly, I think, in this situation. Now, some people would say, well, if not for staying home and safer at home and all of that, then we would be in a far worse place. But we're not as in a bad of a place. Even with these flare-ups around the state, Montgomery and Stephen Reed on TV every 15 minutes, that's the mayor of Montgomery, by the way, we are still on a good trajectory here overall compared to what we were expecting. Compared to what the calamity we were expecting, it's not even close to any of that. Why do we have to continue to pretend that it is? And that's, you ask these guys that, and you don't have, you get an emotional response. You get this response, why don't you care about people? What is wrong with you? You put capitalism ahead of human life. And you hear these just awful talking points, and they're just driven, I don't know what they're driven by. But that's why I think people get a little suspicious about what's going on here. And they think politics is the motivation. And that, you know, even if we're doing safe things, that's going to influence behavior. It's going to deter people from wearing masks out or 6 feet apart or whatever. Whatever preventive measure, people are going to start to question it and think it is political. Why? Because there are people that are politicizing the other side of it. This is a natural reaction to that. This is nothing but that. So I don't blame you guys out there that shrug off the mask and all that, especially you guys that think this is political. I'm not saying that it is or isn't, but I do think it is a valid concern that you're justified in thinking that, because you turn on the TV and you're shamed. You're told CNN was down in Gulf Shores. And they are just, they try to find every drunk redneck on the beach to interview them about coronavirus so they can show their elitist audience on CNN how dumb and barefoot we are in Alabama. Do you think they did that just on a fact-finding mission, or do you think they wanted to make a statement? I think it's the latter. I think it's clearly the latter. Now, I see some pictures. The reporter they sent to Gulf Shores would wear his mask on camera but took it off after he was on camera. We have pictures of that. People send them in like crazy. That just makes their argument for them. So, like, I would tell these figures in health and telling people to be responsible, and these voices of reason, like these Dr. Scott Harris's, you need to tell CNN and MSNBC to cut it out. We're trying to keep people safe, and you're making this a political issue, and you're making people not want to do it. Because no one wants to be lectured by Don Lemon or Anderson Cooper, Rachel Maddow, or whoever about what they should and shouldn't do with their lives. We pay taxes. We are, you know, somehow we have made it throughout the course of human civilization. We've done it without CNN telling us how to live our lives. We haven't had, you know, the death of human civilization. And this is not the time to act like that. So you can do this in a responsible way, but shame isn't the way to do it. I mean, the way these guys think is just devoid of what human nature lends itself to. Somebody tells you not to do something, well, I'll show them. I'm not going to do it. And you do it with such an air of smugness in a way that's just, it's demeaning to, for some people. And what do you think they're going to do? But that's my rant about the mask and all of that. It's not that we've politicized it on the right. I think the left politicized it, and this is just a natural reaction to it. We're going to take a brief time out. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome to FM Talk 106.5, FMTalk1065.com. Jeff Poor filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan today on Midday Mobile. He has stepped away from the microphone and for whatever reason said, hey, you guy, you're off the street there. Why don't you come in and do my radio show? It didn't really go that way, but it went something to that effect. Nonetheless, I am sitting in for Sean today. So glad you could be with us. Still to come on the program today, we got Steve Flowers. He's a columnist. You see him around the state a lot. It adds an interesting historic perspective. Always good to get him on. I hosted Huntsville, WVNN. He's a usual guest, but I thought it'd be good to bring him down to Mobile and let you guys hear a little inside baseball about Alabama politics. So looking forward to that. Wanted to get into something that I got into earlier this morning. As I do every Wednesday morning, usually on time, sometimes not quite on time. Do a segment with Sean at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays. And we were talking about it this morning a little late, but the whole Senate race is right now. This is Jeff Sessions down by, I don't think it's 23 points. It's probably more like 15, maybe a little less than that. These would be a lot closer than what that signal poll says. But there's clearly something going on where the electorate in Alabama, the Republican electorate, that is, see something in Tommy Tuberville. And it's not that he gives these philosophical deep speeches about policy and things. It's a mentality, it's an attitude. And it's this it's an outsider electorate right now. On one side, you have Jeff Sessions. I think this is a friendly audience for Jeff Sessions. Mobile, his hometown. The thing that draws people to Jeff Sessions is he is the philosophical underpinnings of Trump's brand of populism that won him the 2016 election. You know, immigration, trade, foreign policy, it's different from what anything the Republican Party looked like prior to, you know, this. Like George W. Bush, neocon, is kind of, you know, you play the word association game here. Even Ronald Reagan was more of the Milton Friedman Heritage Foundation type of conservatism. But we went away from these ideologies with Trump to just what's good for America. Let's make America great again. What's good? That sounds good. Let's do that. Let's build a wall. Let's put tariffs on China. They deserve it. They're not playing fair. And it's not really something that, well, let's get the textbook out and see what, like Hayek would have said about this. How would he have handled this? It is more of an emotional underpinning. That's Trump. And it changes. It's erratic. But we like it, I guess. But it's what causes, what draws us to that? And I think for years, the establishment, and that's not just the political establishment inside the Beltway. It's Madison Avenue that does all the marketing, all these commercials you see. It's Hollywood. I mean, they've taken a lot of things for granted. And they just, there is a level of condescension, let's say, on the way they look at the public and the people that they are, you know, their customers. We're the smart people. We got the 202 area code. I made something for myself. I left the little town. I went to the big city, and I'm going to make it. And you know, there's that air. I lived in D.C. I saw it. I was a part of it. It actually was a part of that, but you know, I was like a cog in the wheel. I saw how it worked. I think the rest of the country sees that, and they want to push back against it. They don't like that you have these people that think they're smarter than you kind of calling the shots. And that's where Donald Trump comes in. That is the response to all of that. That's what Donald Trump captures. He is, you told us we can't elect this guy. Guess what? We're going to elect this guy. Now, I don't say it's completely that, but there's a lot of that in the electorate. That is, I think, what draws him so much support in Alabama. That we're dissatisfied with the system. We need a change agent. Donald Trump represents the best change agent possible. It wasn't Marco Rubio. It wasn't Ted Cruz, even. It wasn't Jeb Bush, for sure. It wasn't, you know, any of these other guys that ran in 16. It was Donald Trump. He is the one that doesn't really belong in this lineup. And that's why he did so well. And that's, you know, in some other parts of the state, I mean, the country, like Michigan or where he wanted the Rust Belt, yes, we could talk about these philosophical issues, these economic issues, the system of governance. We could talk about, you know, manufacturing coming back to the United States or why it left in the first place because of weird trade deals and things of that nature. It's all kind of a mix. It's a package. This is the reason Donald Trump is president of the United States. But in this part of the country, in the South, is a pushback against the elite establishment, I think. And it may be different in the reason why Donald Trump wins in Wisconsin than it is in Alabama. It's two separate things. It's not just one monolithic thing. And that's what people mess up here. Let's look at it from the Senate side. You have Jeff Sessions, who represents, I think, what really won Donald Trump the Rust Belt, the Midwestern part of the country, and perhaps parts of the state of Alabama. There are some towns in Alabama where you go to, and the one I always like to talk about is Monroeville, where Vanity Fair was the way of life for a lot of people for years and years and years and years. And then in the 90s, Vanity Fair has to go chasing cheap labor because and Congress practically paved the way for them with NAFTA. I mean, there are people that are dissatisfied with those kinds of policies where politicians get elected and they're more concerned about Wall Street's bottom line and their dividend and their share price than they are about kind of what's good for the American country. But the ideologues will tell you, well, rising tide lifts all boats. Well, it's hard to tell somebody that doesn't have a job anymore, that had a way of life in Monroeville, Alabama, and had to move elsewhere because of this. Well, where's your rising tide right now when I need it? Well, just wait, you know. So it's not it's more of a pragmatic thing than a practical thing to tell people these things. It may work in a general audience in a general sense, but specifically, it doesn't work. And then over time, that's motivating people to get engaged in civic process. But in Alabama, we sit around and we do think awful far that we have these masters of the universe that are telling us what to do. And that's what I think Tommy Tuberville is more of that. He is the middle finger to the establishment. He may not, you know, we can talk about whatever he says on policy and any of that stuff. And he says kind of the right thing, but he doesn't go in depth like a Jeff Sessions. Like, Jeff Sessions is the philosophical underpinning of Trumpism, right? But that's not what draws Alabama to Donald Trump. It is a protest thing. And what's the thing they say, that people will vote against something before they will vote for something? Well, in a way, voting for Donald Trump, and I think by extension Tommy Tuberville, is voting against the establishment, against the elites. That's something, if you want my critique, Jeff Sessions needs to tap into. That there is a dissatisfaction with the way the country is and who's calling the shots and how it seems a little top-heavy. and the sneering of the establishment, the sneering of, you know, just, you don't know what's good for you. We're going to fix it for you. Don't worry. You go back to your shanties. You go back to do what you got to do. And we'll take care of it. And that's not an American ideal. That is counter to the DNA of the country. That people just kind of want to make for themselves. It's an impulse of human spirit or whatever. And that's where Jeff Sessions has got to, I think, maybe understanding that he is Trumpism, but Tuberville is more Trump. And that's the winning message, at least here in Alabama. We got to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan today on Midday Mobile. Always a pleasure to fill in on this station. I hadn't done it in a while, but I'm in exile. Long story short, my employer Cumulus said, hey, go take a week off without pay while we figure this COVID-19 stuff out. So I'm adhering to that. I will be back on Monday, but I am making my way around the state. Yesterday I had the pleasure of filling in for Baron Coleman in Auburn, Alabama, where he is now a radio host, and so we're getting a tour of Alabama. But always, like I said, want to give a thanks to Sean Sullivan for letting me sit behind his microphone. Got a guest in studio. Well, he's more of an observer, I would say. What would we describe you? Can we officially identify you as with the Jeff Sessions campaign, or are you just a part of it? And how would you identify yourself, Will?
I would say I'm a part of the Jeff Sessions campaign, yes.
But for the sake of this conversation, Will Hampson does a radio show also at Huntsville. Will Hampson Weekends on WVNN. The time seems to vary. I can never keep up with it, but sometime on Saturday afternoons. And, you know, we get in these debates about Tommy Tuberville versus Jeff Sessions all the time, obviously, because he's a part of their campaign. But you argue, look, we're on the right. This way of approaching this election is the way to win, or the way it should be to win, or you know, like, that Jeff Sessions is right for this job. You just have to put trust in your faith in this sort of ideology.
Well, I think Jeff Sessions is what every single state should strive for in a representative. I mean, if you look at Jeff Sessions, and you know this as kind of the D.C. insider, when he would walk down the halls in Congress, he wasn't beloved by everyone. He wasn't a part of the swamp like he's made out to be. I mean, this was a guy where they would run in the other direction because he wasn't friends with everybody. He would pick the fights that you weren't supposed to pick.
He did, certainly, with immigration. And I actually seen Jeff Sessions and John McCain have some, like, really unfriendly, uncomfortable situations in person. Well, what I would say, though, is I think his time, he was certainly that. But then you had this wave there. You had Jim DeMint come in, and you had Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee. They kind of upped the game a little bit with that stuff, with the filibusters and sticking the eye in the finger in the eye of leadership. Sessions never did that. He played by the rules, and then these guys kind of just said, this rule is stupid. We're going to filibuster drones or surveillance or whatever it is, which maybe that makes it harder to sell the outsider label.
Well, I think it is in a sense, but again, I mean, Jeff Sessions was effective. This is a guy that you're talking about that killed amnesty almost single-handedly three different times under both a Republican and a Democratic president. I mean, so this is a guy that understood the fights that were important to him. I mean, when George W. Bush tried to pass an amnesty, a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants, this was not a guy who fell in line with leadership. This was a guy that said, no, this is what I stand for. This is what's important to me. I'm going to take this his fight on, and consistently, time and time again, he won. And I think that's what you kind of see is what Donald Trump made us realize, and I think people understood this for a long time, but when he discussed the deep state, what he was pointing out was the obvious revolving door where you've got kind of big business, you've got Wall Street, you've got K Street, you've got these insiders that control the workings of government, and you've got the average person that really has no say to that. But I think he paints with such a broad brush that we start to think that everyone's deep state, everyone's the swamp, and that's not the case. There are some very, very good people in Washington, and to diminish the work that they do, I think does a disservice to the good ones.
Yeah, but that's obviously fair and valid. But what wins elections? And the perception is, well, we did it Jeff Sessions' way for 20 years. He was there for 20 years, and he stopped a lot of bad stuff from becoming law. But where are the end results for everything else?
But I think it depends, and that's where the state of Alabama is incredibly interesting, because there's pockets where culturally it's different. I mean, if you're in Mobile, you might be more willing to go for someone like a Bradley Byrne or a Jeff Sessions that plays the game, because you want Austell to be thriving. You want some of these industries.
Overall, how much does that matter? You know, we always hear about how great of a U.S. Senator Richard Shelby is. And Richard Shelby, you know, he's done so much for this state. Is that really what we want in Alabama? Do we really want the guy that's going to bring home the bacon?
Well, I'd say a guy that's won re-election, what, 8 times?
But he seems
to be someone that we want. I mean, we grovel about him all the time, but we send him back.
He's always outspent his opponent by like 10 to 1. I mean, you know, these guys get in Washington, D.C., and they build up these war chests because every trade association, every lobby, I mean, they give to his campaign because, well, he's the guy who's chairing appropriations. And then an upstart, I'd point to Jonathan McConnell from down here, ran against him in 16. Just humiliating. I mean, it's not quite as simple as saying, well, he must be doing something right. Well, what he's doing right isn't just that he's bringing home bacon, but he's also built this impressive campaign infrastructure. He's ready to roll at a moment's notice, and he's worked his way up the chain, so he's made a lot of friends, and he's got a lot of favorites he could call in when needed.
Well, I think what you see is that there are two really aspects to being a United States Senator. One is the economic interests of your state. You need to protect your state. You need to make sure that your state is thriving. I'd put Richard Shelby probably in 90% of that category. The other category is that you have to represent the people on the issues that matter to the country. That's where you get the immigrations, the trade deals. Donald Trump is much more in that category. Donald Trump is not necessarily about bringing home the bacon, about the economic interests. He is about the bread and butter cultural issues to our country.
As conservatives, and in a state like Alabama, where we want just to be able to provide and do for ourselves, I mean, how many people are really looking for a handout from the federal government? Sure, it'd be great if we got Austell. Sure, it'd be great if we got Boeing. Sure, not Boeing, but Airbus. Sure, it'd be great if we got, all these defense contractors were made happy in Huntsville and down at Fort Rucker. Those are all, like, I wouldn't say drops in the bucket. They're certainly significant. But the average person, the average Republican voter, at least, I don't know about Democrat voters, but I would say in a Republican primary, I mean, you're really benefiting from what the quote-unquote bacon that Richard Shelby brings to Alabama.
I agree with that. And I think if you look at the Donald Trump voter, what he represented was the forgotten men and women. People just want to feel like there's someone out there that gets me, is fighting for me. And I think for so long, you look at who we were sending up there. I mean, even George Bush, Bill Clinton, these guys, there were a majority of Americans and probably a majority of Alabamians that felt like these people just don't get me. George Bush doesn't get me. He might be a Republican. He might be a better option than Al Gore and John Kerry.
I mean, like,
but it doesn't mean that they get me.
The one thing that I will say George Bush got right on that were the tax cuts. That went money back in people's pocket. But have you ever gotten like one of these tax cut refunds?
No, I haven't.
So when you get them, it's like, you know, wow, $200 check, or what do you spend your $1,000 or what? Yeah. Such a small part of people's income. They don't want $1,000 check from the government. They want the ability to earn, you know, they want that first job out of college, 40 grand, and then they want to be able to build off of that, right? That's what people want. They don't want a $1,000 check with Donald Trump's name on it. And I think that's the psychology here. That's such an important point that, well, if you just make it possible, there's just enough you could do with economic policy to make it possible. That's what we want out of our leaders.
But I think that's where the misconception is here, and that's where someone hears a Tommy Tuberville going, the system's rigged, they're out to get you, and people go, yeah.
But the system is rigged.
Absolutely, but Jeff Sessions is over here saying pretty much the same thing in a much more boring way, saying, I want to get rid of the H-1B visa programs, I want to get rid of the OPT programs that allow these nationals to come in and take American jobs. Jeff Sessions is saying the same thing. It might not be as sexy, but they are saying the same thing, and that's my frustration with a lot of this, is that I don't think that he's not making the arguments. I think people want to feel warm and fuzzy inside sometimes, and that's not necessarily going to happen. The people that want to take on these fights, they might not always make you feel warm and fuzzy, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to go and do it. He's shown throughout his entire career that he will get it done.
But it's more than that. It's you. It's not that you're sending Tommy Tuberville to go up there and institute a policy. You want Tommy Tuberville to go up there and wreck what's going on up there. I think
I want him to make me feel warm and fuzzy because I feel like he's taking on everything.
Hold your boat there. This is what's going on. Alabama sends a Donald Trump into office to upset the apple cart. He upsets, you know, he's going to upset this nice little cozy system they have in Washington, D.C. That is what he is set out to do. And I think Tommy Tuberville represents that. He may not implement a policy or anything, but he's going to come up there and they're going to say, hey, we need you to vote on this budget. Is Tommy Tuberville going to go along with that?
Well, the question here is, does Donald Trump need a Tommy Tuberville cheerleader on the sideline, cheering him on and clapping every time he does something well, or does he need someone like a Jeff Sessions who can be out front blocking for him?
It's not that, though. I mean, you're one vote out of 100. I mean, how much can you do? But if you don't go a lot, U.S. senator has a lot of ways, Jeff Sessions showed this, to slow things down and stop things, more so than you do in the House of Representatives. And is Jeff Sessions that guy, or who's better suited to be that guy?
Who's willing to take on those fights?
Right.
I think the choice is obvious.
I think they both would. I mean, but we'll see. All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore sitting in for the great Sean Sullivan today as I'm taking some time away from Huntsville. Usually you can hear me on WVNN. If you're ever in the Huntsville area, you also read my work at Breitbart News and Yellowhammer News as well. Also, since I've been talking to Mobile Audience, you also read me in Land Yap every Wednesday. Got a new column out today, Winners and Losers of the 2020 legislative session. Go check it out. I put some thought into it. But join us online. Speaking of fantastic columns and great columnist, household name in many quarters in this state, a friend of mine, Steve Flowers, joins us online. Steve, how are you today?
Yes, doing great, Jeff. Good to talk with you. From Mobile.
From Mobile today. So tell me something. The Senate race really, over the weekend, it really took off. I think we're out of the coronavirus funk with the campaign there, and now we're heading into more exciting times, if you will.
Well, you're right. It started off with a bang, too. Although Twitter wars and bonding between Trump and Sessions really cranked it off in a hurry and in a big way, too. It brought attention to the race, you know, but it's still a good while away. It's still 6 weeks away longer. To the primary.
It's really forcing these campaigns to get going, though, I think, because Trump gets in and you get all this national attention and you start seeing, well, we got to respond to this or we got to do that. And I think that lends itself to a more of a faster cycle, if you will.
It certainly does. It was, but I said to other people, you know, I'm sort of proud of Sessions for standing up for himself. You know, he's always been sort of an Eagle Scout choir boy. Mama's boy, and he let Trump bully him and kick him around for 3 years and not say anything. Finally, he fought back a little bit. I think it's good for him to do that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, he couldn't just keep doing what he was doing and saying, look, I'm going to be Trump's biggest ally while Trump is just going after him. But my thinking here is suddenly, is he run the risk of seeing as being, you know, this being a referendum on Donald Trump? A vote for Jeff Sessions is a vote against Trump, and a vote for Tuberville is a vote for Trump. Is that, you think that's a risky proposition?
I don't think he had anything to lose, Jeff. I think he was, obviously, that Trump was going to consistently bombard him and have vitriolic tweets toward him, and ever since he was Attorney General, he's done that to him. And he turned the other cheek for two or three years while he was Attorney General, and last year while he was running for the Senate, but I don't think anybody was going to buy into the fact that Jeff Sessions was Trump's man in that race. Trump was going to make that clear. So, Tuberville really hadn't got to do anything. It was let Trump do all his campaigning for him against Sessions. But so Sessions had no choice but to fight back. I mean, this is the right move. Probably helps him. My guess is I was proud of him, proud to see him fight back. He's been such a mama's boy and choir boy all his life, you know, and just, you know, turn the other cheek type of fella. But in this case, you know, you got to fight fire with fire.
So you think it actually helps you? I mean, do you believe this? The polling out there says that Signal poll, Brent Buchanan's group, says 23 points. I think it's a little closer to that. Maybe it is double digits, but I think this contest is probably closer than 23 points.
I would concur with you. I have a lot of respect for Buchanan and the Signal poll. It's been pretty accurate, but that's pretty far out there. That 23 points. When I was asked that, when it first came out, I thought that's just unheard of. But I think it could be double digits, though, Jeff. I think 10 or 12 is more likely. 23 just seems way out there.
He may be
really zeroing in on a likely Republican voter.
It seems like it's going to be tough finding out who is a likely voter right now. When you go to the field and you poll these guys, what defines a likely voter? Because with the virus and people, maybe they say they're a likely voter, are they really going to be voting? I mean, you know, like, I think that the rules of the game and the rules of polling, it makes it a lot harder to get a good feel for this race.
I totally agree with you. You can't, you don't know who's going to show up. I mean, you really don't, because consistently older people vote and you're, you know, conversely telling them to stay home and then go vote at the same time. And, you know, if you've ever looked at the poll, people who work on the polls, you know, I may be old at 67, 68, but, I mean, those folks are close to 90 that work on those polls. And you know, they may sign up. I mean, I bet they're having a hard time finding poll workers.
Well,
I bet some of the people who would like to go vote and work on the polls may say, well, Lord, I don't know. You know, I'm 90 years old. I don't know if I need to go out there or not.
Do you think Jeff Sessions has an older voter or is a younger vote? I mean, like, it seems to me, this is my theory, that the Jeff Sessions probably appeals to older voters, and perhaps Tuberville appeals to younger voters because of the football and all of that with the culture in this state.
I think it does in this regard, but I don't know the delineation. I think the voters are still going to be average older people. That's just consistent throughout history, that older people vote more. But I think it goes more along educational and urban versus rural lines. I think your more urban, sophisticated, better educated voter is going to vote for Sessions, who you might find in suburbs of Huntsville and Montgomery and Birmingham and Mobile. Whereas the rural voter, the guy who has a shotgun and a pickup truck, is going to vote for Tuberville because all they know is Trump says that Tuberville's their man and they don't like, he didn't like Sessions. They don't care whether Trump asked Sessions or something illegal or not. They're not getting to the weeds of the issue of Sessions trying to defend his recusal on the Russian thing as being the proper thing to do. All they know is Trump doesn't like him.
Well, what do you attribute this to? Now, if you look back at the primary on March 3rd, Jeff Sessions did really well in the Wiregrass, and Tuberville did really well in Jefferson and Shelby counties. I would have thought that would have been flip-flopped, I mean, like, based on what you just said, and that seems to be the conventional wisdom, but for whatever reason, Tuberville did well in Birmingham, and Jeff Sessions did well between Montgomery and Dothan.
Tuberville ran even with him in Birmingham, but the Wiregrass may be a religious thing. The Wiregrass in the area right below Huntsville, it's not really the Tennessee Valley, but I call it the area of, between Coleman, Pinson Valley, and all there are your most religious areas of the state, and they know historically that Sessions is a very religious person, so that may be something to that, you know, to Sessions being doing well in the Wiregrass in that area. But in the more rural areas, if you look at that, that's where Tuberville did better in the rural areas. He didn't carry Madison. I don't think he carried Mobile, and I think he just broke even in the Birmingham suburbs. But I think the people who come back, it may surprise you, but Sessions may be in better shape than you think he is. I mean, they're going to pose a picture of the entire electorate, and you hit it nail on the head that, who's going to vote? So you don't know which one of those people they're polling are going to actually show up to vote. And my guess is you're going to have a big turnout in the Wiregrass and in Mobile Baldwin area because of those congressional runoffs. And I still go back to my old theory of what's called friends and neighbors politics in Alabama, and that is that people will vote for somebody from their neck of the woods. And Jeff Sessions is from Mobile, and it may accrue to his advantage. He may pick up those Bradley Byrne voters in Mobile and Baldwin. My guess is he does, and that's what I'm thinking. And you may have a guy in Sand Mountain say, I like Tuberville because Trump likes him, but he may not remember to vote that day. But you got a congressional race down there in Mobile that's neck and neck, and then they're more liable to go vote in that race, and they just say, well, I'm voting for Sessions too because he's from Mobile. So maybe something to, he may get some inherent friends and neighbors votes, and he may get. I've told you this over the years that my observation of observing Alabama politics for close to six decades now is that historically Alabama voters have shown a real independent streak, and Sessions is hitting on this chord and saying, "Yeah, Mr. Trump, we're going to vote for you, President Trump." But you know, Alabama wants to elect their own senator, and I've told you this on the radio lots of times that George Wallace in his heyday would endorse somebody. And invariably they would always lose, and I think it was because Alabamians just resent someone having the arrogance to tell you who to vote for in another race. They think, well, I voted for you for that job, you ought to do your job, and let me decide who I want to be, my senator or my sheriff or whoever. You know, you stick to your own knitting, if you will. You know, you stick to being president. I'm going to vote for you as president, but y'all, I want to elect my own senator. And I think Sessions is trying to come with that theme a little bit, and it may resonate. It has historically. There was a classic race in Baldwin and Mobile County when Pippa won that Senate race down there, the state Senate race. He wasn't supposed to win that race. He was, like, considered a third-place finisher. And Bob Riley, who was a sitting governor, came in there and campaigned for somebody who was supposed to win. That guy ran third. Pippa won that race. And I went back to my old theory that it was because people resented Bob Riley getting involved in those races. So there may be some resentment there, but however, if you made me bet, I bet Trump's endorsement prevails because Trump's got this weird following that just they just say, look, I like this guy. And by the way, if you're a conservative Republican, you got a reason to like him. He's been pretty good conservative.
Hey, Steve, we're about out of time here, but before I let you go, you have a book of Goats and Governors, Six Decades of Colorful Alabama Political Stories, and it's, like, I think one of the must-reads for folks in this profession, but of interest in Alabama politics. The story about Big Jim Folsom, you know the one I'm talking about. I would like for this Mobile audience to hear you tell
which
story.
Which one are you talking about?
The trap.
The what now?
The trap for old Big Jim.
Oh, yeah. Well, Big Jim was real uninhibited and gregarious, and he would say anything. And he would campaign on the rural stump, and he'd tell the country folks, he'd say, you know, Big Jim's going to steal a little bit, and y'all know I'm going to steal a little bit. I think I'm going to steal much of those black belt planters that's been sitting for y'all for years. And they say, y'all know, they say, old Big Jim takes a drink every now and then. I just here to tell y'all, that they got a hotel room in downtown Montgomery. Them big black belt planters and big mules are trying to build a set of trap for old Big Jim. In that room, they got whiskey. They got the best whiskey you can find. They got bourbon, they got scotch, they got vodka. And the next room, they got women. They got the best looking women you've ever seen. I'm gonna tell you something, boys. If you set a trap, if you bait a trap with whiskey and women, you're gonna catch Big Jim every time. I'll see y'all later.
Fantastic. Hey, Steve, we gotta get out here before we let you go. Where can folks find your columns?
I'm in all those Baldwin County papers: Fairhope, Baymanette, Daphne, all through there, and Atmore, and Clark County. But also SteveFlowers.us.
Hey, Steve.
It came out today. SteveFlowers.us. It came out today in all those papers in Fairhope, Daphne, and Atmore. And then it came out in Clark County. And then it's online, SteveFlowers.us. I talk about the Bob Riley and Mike Hubbard connection.
All right.
In fact, I think Hubbard's finally going to go to jail.
Fantastic. Well, be sure to check that out. Steve, as always, thanks for making time.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's Steve Flowers, columnist, and we got to take one more time out. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for legendary Sean Sullivan today. Sean will be back with you tomorrow, so make sure that you tune in for that. Didn't really talk about this much. Wanted to work this in real quick. Alabama legislature just got an email from the Alabama Policy Institute wanting a special session to address key COVID-19 related issues. Do we really want the legislature back in session? It wasn't that good of a run for them. My problem is the answer to that question I'm going to get to is yes. And I'll tell you why. But they didn't really handle it that well this last time around. And I don't think it's of their own doing, but they should have known, I guess, or at least had it built in that the governor's going to look out for the governor and the legislature's got to look out for the legislature. So the issue there, I know y'all talked about it a lot on this station, on the $200 million new state house with COVID-19 relief money. That was done to embarrass the legislature. Ivy won legislature, nothing. But here's the problem. Ivy scared away the legislature. They're out. They're done for the 2020. There's no counterbalance to what the governor's going to do now. And here's what you need to watch for, folks. We're going to talk about Medicaid expansion possibly. I don't know. I think it's out there. I think a compact with the Poarch Creek Indians is also on the table. And you want that balance. You want those voices pushing back against the governor. And what she has successfully done, I would say, is kind of move them out of the way, move them out of position. And you have a lot. Now you have members of the legislature. Well, I don't want my constituents thinking that I, Joe Blow legislature is wanting to build a Taj Mahal state house, so I got to figure out how to do this just right. But there's so many things the governor could do. I would say the one you really probably is the most likely to happen is this $900 million plan for new prisons in Alabama. We've been talking about new prisons for the last 10, 15 years. It never happens. The DOJ has been breathing down Alabama's neck. They haven't instituted a takeover. I mean, they once did, I think, in the 1980s. And that's kind of why we are where we are now, because Governor Wallace at the time had made building new prisons a jobs program. So we have this kind of weird upside-down system we have in Alabama Department of Corrections. But let me tell you something. If the legislature were involved in the prison situation, probably save the taxpayer $200 million. That they could bond it out, get it a much better deal, and you're not going to go through this, what they want to do now, which is a lease system. So Governor Ivey can say, hey, private contractor, come in, buy some land, build a prison, and then on a year-to-year basis, we'll sign a lease. That's what she has the power to do, given with the appropriations she's given to for the Alabama Department of Corrections. And you would have this facility, you'd have this land, it's staffed by government employees for the ADOC, and you have, hopefully, you have the DOJ going away. that this is up to snuff, and Judge Myron Thompson in Montgomery won't call us a violation of the Eighth Amendment, and everybody lives happily ever after, or whatever you want to say. But that seems to be, when you give the governor that authority to do all this, there's a lot of things that could happen. There's a lot of power there, and it's not checked. And in addition to that, as I said, there's not a component there to really save money where it could be. So the legislature has fallen down, and then they talked about this in 2019. We heard from President Pro Tem Del Mar, so yeah, we're looking at a special session late 2019. Didn't happen. Okay, maybe early 2020. Didn't happen. Okay, we're going to address it in general session. Didn't happen because of pandemic. Well, when do you get to it? Do you ever get to it? It's things like that you got to think about. I think very important. In the coming months and weeks, you're going to, I think, see the governor start positioning herself to do some of this. And that's gambling, that's prisons. And I don't, Medicaid expansion, maybe something going on there with rural health care they got to work through. So that's, I know we don't really want government in session and doing all these things, but I think it's important to recognize we have this check and balance system for a reason. And right now it's not functioning like it should. All right, folks, I got to get out of here. Stay tuned for Paul Feinbaum. This has been Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.